Hello, Michael. Welcome to Transmission.
Hey, Ed.
And I'd love to kick off with just a bit of background on NLX and the role that you play for NLX.
Yeah, my name is Michael Lynch. I manage the Global Network Operations Center here at NLX in Dublin. I suppose, first of all, NLX is the innovation arm of the utility Enel based in Italy. It's a large distribution and generation network. We call ourselves the Network Operations Center, otherwise known as a VPP or Virtual Power Plant.
And so NLX manages 9 gigs of VPP across 14 countries. So could you give us an outline of the areas that the VPP covers and what it means to manage 9 gigs across such a wide global footprint?
It's an absolutely massive portfolio that we manage, and we have different offices in different country in 14 countries globally, and we are kind of hub and spoke model as such. So we're based in Dublin, Ireland. Yeah, I suppose we should probably start off with what a virtual power plant is, first of all. So what we're doing is we're aggregating distributed energy resources. So businesses, small, medium, large, into portfolios. And then from there, when the system requires it, those portfolios will be dispatched or called upon to help alleviate some stresses on the grid. That makes the NOC a very exciting place, as you could imagine, operating in 14 countries, 10 time zones, really depending on the time of day, depends on how busy you can be, and also with the people that you're interacting with around the world as well. So it's an exciting space.
Because you're kind of operating globally, does that mean that control center is effectively operating 24/7 to keep control of this 9 gigs?
Yeah, 24/7, 365.
And so just on that 9 gigs of assets, I think hopefully to give people some context of like what 9 gigawatts is, how do you think about 9 gigawatts in terms of the amount of power that you are controlling within that VPP?
Yeah, so 9 gigs is absolutely massive. We have 15,000 industrial sites. That's around 6,000 customers. We're active in 100 DR programs globally in 14 countries. It's the scale is absolutely huge. The different types of programs that we're operating in as well, we've got your capacity markets that we have. We're also in balance markets, frequency response. So it's pretty complex, pretty huge at scale.
And you mentioned DR. What does DR stand for?
Demand response.
Okay.
So what we're doing is aggregating factories or C&I businesses into portfolios. And then when a system operator requires, they will send us a system alert or notification. We will then notify our customers of the event, and they will hopefully either curtail their load, so switch production, or actually come off the grid for a period of time, or they might have on-site generation, maybe battery storage, CHPs, or generators as well.
So when we're talking about the resources that make up that VPP portfolio, you mentioned that it's a large number of industrial sites, but also potentially batteries on those sites. So what does the mix look like in terms of the generation or the load that is within the VPP?
So battery storage is growing at the moment. It's becoming more and more popular, but most of our sites are either curtailment. So essentially what they're doing is maybe switching their production to a later period, so, and they have the availability to do so, or they're actually stopping their production for maybe a couple of hours. Usually if you think of most grids, you get a peak in the afternoon. If we get that system alert from a system operator, what we'll do is we'll notify the customers. The customers will maybe stop that production for a couple of hours, and they'll be able to start it up again after that evening peak. When it comes down to the generation side of things, it's fantastic, right? If that peak occurs in the afternoon and you have a battery storage, hopefully you've charged that up during the night when prices were low, and then you can run that battery in the afternoon and not have any production impacted by that. As well, if you have a CHP or an on-site generator, you can run it during that period as well and avoid, you know, the system peak in the afternoon, the high prices that come with it as well.
So that VPP is a blend of industrial load that is shifting, as well as some sort of on-site generation potentially from battery storage.
Yeah, correct. It's a mix. So the thing is, with the beauty is with a VPP, it's all types of assets, right? And it's everything that they could do. So some sites are curtailment, some sites are generation, all different industries. You know, we've got cold storage facilities, food manufacturing, data centers, and we've also got, you know, everything from your hotels and your supermarkets and even your education facilities as well.
And you mentioned in your example, you said that you would let the customer know and the customer might sort of shift demand to a later period of time. That to me kind of calls out that there's still an element of kind of manual intervention within that process. I was perhaps more thinking the VPP would kind of be more automated, but is there still a sort of a balance of manual actions going on within the VPP? How should we think about that?
It depends is the short answer. So we do have some customers that obviously want the controls. They want the physical notification. They want to be able to receive the notification and go, okay, now is the right time for me. I can come off the grid. I can switch my production. Then you have some customers that will give us full control, and that can be automated, right? Also, it depends on the types of programs. If you think of frequency response, right? It's at a set point, the customer doesn't get the choice, but they also have the ability that they can respond in a very short space of time. So it depends on, that's why certain customers are suited to different certain programs, but also it depends on the needs of the customer. And the beauty of, I suppose, the VPP is we can sit down with a customer, see what works for them, and put them in a program and cater to their needs as well. Because ultimately, I suppose, if you look at demand response and you look at a virtual power plant, our assets, our customers, this comes secondary, right? This is not their primary focus in business, and we have to understand that and respect that and be flexible.
No, that makes sense. You also mentioned one of the hot topics in the energy space as well, in data centers. You must spend a lot of time thinking about the flexibility that you could get from data center clients. Are they similar to other assets? Do they have the kind of that flexibility in order to adjust their demand, or are they sort of less flexible than other types of load?
Data centers are perfect for demand response in terms of they're very stable. Not only that, but they pride themselves on uptime. So they have a lot of redundancies in place. So therefore, it makes them very suitable for demand response. And also, they're very reliable, right? If we call an event, they'll show up and they will perform. So data centers are really good customer of ours. And obviously, data centers, they're starting to increase, you know, the drive with AI as well. Data centers becoming more and more popular. They're a really good candidate for demand response. And in Ireland, we're actually a large player with data centers. We have a lot of customers that are working with us.
And maybe just going back to kind of the basics of a VPP. So what are the benefits of a VPP?
First of all, it's when you think of a VPP and we're transitioning to renewable energy is volatile, right? You know, the wind is not always blowing, the sun is not always shining, and you need something that will fill that gap, right? Someone that's going to step in at short notice and be able to respond. That is the VPP. We can fill that void, right? We can respond really quickly. Assets are already in the ground, so you don't need to build a power plant. They're already there, they're already existing. The other benefits as well, I suppose, is with the increase in electric vehicles and AI as well, there's the need for flexibility, right? There's greater demand on the grid, and that's where we come into play. Obviously, with most grids, the infrastructure, it's developing, right? With the increase in demand, it's a lot of money to upgrade the grid and get it into a state that it's able to handle that demand. But if you think of demand response and if you think of VPPs, we've got the assets that we can spin up really quickly and that can respond really quickly. And it's a lot more friendly an environment than it is, you know, with a peak in power plant that's maybe only needed for two or three times over the course of the year. That still needs to be manned. That still needs to be operational all year round.
Well, that's a really good, I think, comparison in terms of those peaking plants being used two or three times in a year. I think people will be interested on the VPP side. Is this something that we rely on, say, two to three times a year? Or is this something that kind of kicks in every single day? What does the typical use case look like?
Oh, it's every day. No, it's most certainly every day. So we do have events that maybe will happen two or three times over the course of the year. They're emergency programs. That's what system operators will keep, you know, for when they're having that emergency, and they will dispatch us and we will respond. But we're also playing in the frequency response place, helping to balance grids and balance the markets as well. And those programs are dispatched more frequently, right, to adjust the imbalances that are happening in the grid every day. that maybe, you know, a normal residential user is blissfully unaware about. But us here in the NOC, we're looking after those events daily. In the past, I suppose, when I joined Enel in 2020, we had just over 600 demand response events. Last year in 2024, we had just over 1,400 events. So that isn't purely driven by emergency programs. So, you know, we're also having frequency events and dealing with those short imbalances as well, offering that flexibility, primarily because as we embrace more renewables, it's needed, right?
That number, that 1,400 events, is that that's per year?
Yeah, that was in 2024.
Okay. And is that, that's across all 14 countries that you cover?
Correct. Yeah. All 14 countries. The work that we do is very seasonal. So a large percentage of our events actually come from North America in the summer months between June and September. A lot of them programs are dispatched, they're peak shaving programs. So as the US heats up, HVAC systems are turned on, people need to cool down, and then that, you know, surge in demand and then supply lack of, we can dispatch our set of customers and help shave that peak off in the afternoon. But then on the flip side, we also have winter FECAM programs, you know, such as Ireland. So when we get those cold snaps where there's not a lot of wind on the grid, the system operator also needs to dispatch us as well. So it's very seasonal where we work, but summertime is our really busy period.
Okay, so it's very much used day to day as kind of these systems go through stress, but also as you then get kind of natural emergencies coming through. So that kind of warm temperatures in the US in summer turn into heat waves or storms, then does the way that the VPP react, does that change in those conditions?
So when you're using it day-to-day, if you think of frequency response and even the balance of markets, it's a lot harder to predict, right? To forecast those imbalances. But when you're thinking of emergency situations, particularly weather, extreme weather like heat waves or winter storms, they're a little bit more easier to forecast and predict because you're working very closely with the local teams and they'll be looking, reviewing a forecast and what's going to happen. And then there's a communication chain there. So we have operations folks in each one of those countries that we liaise with three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Friday, we call it daily stand-ups. There's a reason why they take place on those on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's information sharing, right? So we interact with our folks in APAC, EMEA, and North America. They tell us about their programs that they're responsible. Usually they're looking after maybe 2 to 3 programs, as they'll say the likelihood of an event. So they're looking at the forecast, seeing, you know, is there any heat waves? Is there hot temperatures coming? Or is there a winter storm coming? What's happening on the grid? Is there outages? Is there system alerts that's been posted, giving warnings? Relaying that information to us here in Dublin. And then on foot of that, that allows us to plan and prepare for what could happen. And that's where we come alive with our supervisors and our senior operators. They will start reviewing our checklists and that we'll use to help guide us to manage those events and be prepared so that we're able to manage that demand response event perfectly without any issues.
So how do you ensure that there's kind of the reliability and fast response in these very volatile conditions like you're seeing in Australian summers or Storm Uri within Texas?
Great question. So I suppose when you think of reliability, it starts with us here in the NOC, in the Network Operations Center here in Dublin. So we've got a secure facility that is backed up by UPS. All of our operators, actually, they don't operate with fixed machines. We have laptops. So if we ever needed to evacuate the NOC, we have go bags ready that have our hard drives with all of our process checklists backed up. We're able to set up a satellite NOC nearby and we can go there. And that's the first port of call, right? We need to be in-house. We need to be ready for all eventualities. Only recently in Ireland, we had a storm back in January where our operators, we had to put them up nearby, near the office to ensure that we were operational, right? So that's the first port of call for us to ensure that we're reliable and ready.
So maybe going beyond kind of just the making sure that the control room is there, what does the comms look like with the client to make sure that they are also in a position. So let's say we're talking about really high temperatures within the US and you're kind of working with them around their load, which is for cooling. Obviously, at that point, it's a really critical load for them and obviously not something that a VPP would ever want to kind of move or shift. So how do you make sure that essentially you are moving the right demands given the conditions on the ground?
Well, the system operator, first of all, will send us a notification or an alert that they'll say they'll need these portfolios or resources to curtail or come off the grid. So what we'll do is we'll go into our platform, into our system, we'll notify our customers. And then on foot of that, we'll be able to tell by the platform if customers are able to respond. If they're not, we'll reach out to them, calling them, seeing if they can. If they can't, obviously that's okay, because you know at times it's not their primary focus, but we'll work with the customer to ensure that we'll try to support them through the event where possible.
And let's say you're in this moment, right? So the event is happening either, let's say very cold temperatures, very hot temperatures, or any kind of natural disaster type situation. What does it look like behind the scenes when that's happening?
I call it organized chaos, particularly in summertime. And so when summertime, like I said, North America is our big driver in terms of where we see an upshift. We go from maybe about 70, 80 demand response events a month up to 300 plus, right? So that's really big shift for us. And the training really starts in February of that year. So we'll work very closely with our draw, our colleagues, our counterparts in those countries, and in particularly in the US, and we'll be doing training, we'll be doing simulations of real events, or we call them dispatch days. It's where we look back at the busy days from the previous summer, and then we'll simulate that day. So we'll send a team the real notifications or simulated notifications that we got from our system operators. We'll walk through the events in our training environment, and we train hard. And then when it comes to summer, we're able to perform. And what I mean by perform is we're able to manage that increase in workload by creating actions, sending notifications to customers, making sure all those notifications go out at the right time and customers are well informed of a demand response event. And also we're able to assist, you know, by coaching customers during the events to make sure that they reduce their demand on the grid and help the grid out in the time of need.
Okay. And I think I'm more appreciative of the role a VPP plays, but what are the big operational challenges that you face in managing that decentralized portfolio?
Yeah, so I think some of the biggest challenges that we have, it's juggling the different time zones, right? And the complexity of the different programs. We manage 100 demand response active programs. If I was to add all of our knowledge of all the team we have here in Dublin together, it wouldn't scrape near that 100. So we use processes, checklists to follow. So step by step, you need to read, complete this, move to the next. But everything's always changing. Everything's always evolving. The way our system operators want to dispatch us, it changes. And so we're always trying to juggle that. And then obviously when you add in the different time zones and the different teams and trying to stay informed in what's happening in each region and each market, that can be quite difficult. But we have a great team of supervisors and RTO as well. But yeah, the communication side, the time zones, the program changes, the rule changes, that's definitely, it's a big challenge for us.
On those demand response programs, it sounds like they are very different from one program to another. And yet, just on the face of it, it feels like you've kind of got 9 gigawatts of flexibility, and that 9 gigawatts needs to be flexed in order to help the system operate. How are those demand response programs so different between regions? Because it feels like they should be quite similar.
Oh, they're incredibly different. But that's the challenge for us, right? So we're always trying to take similarities between different countries. So in the knock, if we have a team that's exploring a new country and they're setting up a demand response program or a base there, and they want us to look after it because maybe they've gone from a handful of customers up to maybe a really good customer base, and they come to us and they tell us about their program, and we're trying to understand, you know, is it a capacity market? Is it a balancing mechanism? What are they trying to do? And we're trying to take similarities between other countries that we're supporting. And then we build a base from there. And that's how we approach the team as well when it comes to training. We'll relate one program from a different country to another and we'll say it's quite similar to this, but here are the differences. But overall, demand response is very varied, and that's why it's suited to so many different types of customers, right? You could have a customer that needs, you know, a long lead time, so they need a notice time that's maybe 1 hour or 2 hours. And then you also have different types of customers that maybe have UPS systems and they can respond really quickly. Therefore, they're suited to certain markets like frequency response or operating reserves programs where that fast response is needed.
So for users hearing UPS for the first time, what is UPS?
A UPS system is an uninterruptible power supply. And basically what that'll do is it's a backup electric power supply that will kick in if it senses that power has been lost to a site.
Okay, so that kind of, by the very nature of it being able to react very quickly, it is that sort of flexible asset. So that's why you kind of see it as something that is able to provide additional flexibility across or over and above a more conventional, say, demand asset being shifted. Okay, and looking ahead, how do you see the role of virtual power plants evolving globally, and kind of what excites you most about the future of VPPs in grid flexibility?
I think VPPs, there's always going to be a space for virtual power plants on the grid as we onboard more renewables. There is that volatility there. There will be these times where there will be need a bit of flexibility that will come in and help the grid out. The final 1%, if you want to say, that will always be quite expensive. And that's where I see virtual power plants will have a space, right? They'll be able to come in when maybe the wind's not blowing or the sun is not shining and be able to offer that support to the grid at different times. And I'm really excited about that, especially with small assets as well. So we have a partner called Gogoro in Taiwan, which is battery charging stations, essentially. We've got 2,500 battery chargers in 1,000 locations, and we'll be aggregate them into one unit, and they will respond when there's demand response events on the grid, when there's demand response events in Taiwan. And I think it's going to be really excited to see, it's really exciting to see how small assets will evolve and how VPPs will embrace those and aggregate those together in the grid of the future.
Yeah, I think hugely excited about the scope for the transition the grid is making to having more battery assets within it, whether that's EVs on homes, in businesses, but also the ability to then instruct those assets to charge or discharge earlier / later. I think a huge amount of flexibility will be coming from that transition. I think we've kind of talked a lot about the sort of practicality of how you deliver this. So physically, how do you do it? And how, as a control room, do you sort of best manage it? So we've talked a lot about how you physically dispatch demand and VPPs in order to address some of the needs within the demand response programs. But we haven't talked very much about price. So how do you think about price? And is that a really defining factor of how you organize your dispatch?
Yeah, so a lot of time price isn't determined, right? It's in the stages before that, in various auctions, if it's a capacity market. But I suppose one market that we do take price into consideration would be the NEM in Australia. So it's we will decide to dispatch our assets depending on the price. Very unique market for us to operate in. And I know previously you've had Alex Lehman on the show as well, and he went into great detail. So I found that very interesting. But for us in the NOC, we're constantly looking at the NEM, looking at different alerts that are released to us and deciding when to maybe dispatch our different customers that we have in the various regions in Australia, working very closely with the Australian team, and it's all price dependent.
Okay, so for some regions, the kind of demand response programs set up price before time, and you're very much focused on delivering volume, whereas in the NEM, it is price is driving a little bit of response as well, or is a key driver of response. Okay, really interesting. And to move through into the final two questions. So the first question is there anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, so I think the main thing I'd like to plug is obviously NLX has a really big global presence and a lot of expertise on a global level. So I think if there's any businesses out there that have never heard of demand response or have never been in that space, I think there's no better company to reach out to than NLX because we have the expertise even on a global level to find a solution for your business need.
So on to the final question. Is there a view that you hold that the majority of the market doesn't?
Yeah, so this is kind of unique, but I think some people think that they can automate everything, but I actually don't think that's the case. So I'll relate this back to the virtual power plant. People is the center of the operation for us, and our people are able to respond in real time, are able to overcome so many problems and navigate through so many difficult scenarios that I don't think automation would be able to do that.
I think definitely there are many people who are kind of looking to try and automate this, and energy always feels like a world where so many data points, so many interfaces that it feels like automation might naturally be something that kind of grows into the space. But as you say, the complexity of each of those demand response programs and interacting with customers who might also be dealing with manual things from their side feels like there's still very much a role for the human in this process.
Definitely.
Okay. Michael, thank you for coming on. And we will, I'm sure, revisit the topic of VPP soon.
Thanks for having me, Ed.